Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alpha.
You heard the man. We are and remain at Wildcat Golf Club for the CCA tournament. You can go to ccatexas.org if you want to help a great cause. I'm still here. We got a new body in the building. That's Sean Mates. What's up, Sean?
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing a show really close to compared to how we normally do a show.
I'm not going to try, but I'm pretty sure I can reach out and touch you right now.
I'd appreciate it if you did not. The listener party, if you were walking around after doing the bullpen, should have taught you that I don't like being touched randomly by people.
Well, I'll touch
particularly,
you from the front.
Particularly in a radio environment.
I'll touch you from the front.
That doesn't sound great either. I had enough of that with TSA when I was walking through checkpoints in my last trip. I got that twice on the way and on the way back. Hey, sir, do you want to go in the back room? No, don't take me into the back room. I just want to get to the gate. So do the pat down. And they did it roughly, by the way. But do the pat down and let's get it out of the way. I don't want you walking me to the back room. I don't know what's going to go on back there. Do it in public while being slightly embarrassed.
I feel like I forfeit some of my rights when I go in that back room.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the hell happens when I go in the back room.
Patriot Act is
hey,
in
sir.
When I go.
Hey, sir. Oh, we're going to need you to take down your shorts. Wait a minute. That doesn't feel necessary. So no. No touching, please. But we move on to a game that happened yesterday in the city. And a lot of discussion this morning was, how do we feel? How do we feel about the game? The Texans are 4-1. That should be a source of comfort, right? You are, at this point, at least record-wise, the second-best team in football. We'll see how the Chiefs do tonight against the Saints. But there is this feeling that they aren't what we expected them to be. You beat the Bills at home. That was supposed to be a litmus test of where you were. Coming off a game against the not exactly the next week, but you played a game against the Vikings where you did not show up, and the Vikings may very well be the best team in football, though Sam Darnold may ask us, are you sure about that, considering how he played yesterday? But the way they played over the course of 5 weeks, best team in football, we'll just give them that for now. The Bills were a team who started off really hot. They had their blowout loss to the Ravens on Sunday Night Football last week, so you go, okay. The Bills, we know them. They're a perennial playoff team. They always win their division. They have Josh Allen. Can you hold up? And the Texans, in that first half, made it known that they're clearly the best team on the field, at least that day. And then, of course, some of the fall off happened in the second half, and it led to a close ball game. Some penalties popped up after playing a clean first half, and they got into a dogfight where you're talking about a late turnover by C.J. Stroud leading to a chance for the Bills to take a lead. But for the second consecutive week, the Texans' defense showed up in a situation where a touchdown could maybe change the complexion of the game. So I, being actually, I think, more positive than the guys who I did the show with earlier, think they're 4-1 now. There's nothing to say this five-game stretch is what they're going to be throughout the year. I just take the approach. It's a long year. What they are today ain't going to be what they are in November, December. Hopefully they're better in November and December, and you go, as you're finding yourself, you'll take 4-1.
Yeah, especially as a team that we feel like really hasn't played a complete game yet, and this is a team that hasn't played a complete game yet, and it's 4-1. They're learning that lesson while still winning these games instead of, you look around some of the teams that are 2-3 and 1-4, and you know, you could be the Bengals, and the Bengals haven't played a complete game either. They came pretty close yesterday, but they're losing all these games. The Texans are still coming out on top, and, you know, in the long run, as far as the season goes, that's just so much more important than looking pretty while losing. And I think this week or today is a day where you can be, I guess, a little bit more satisfied with the win, despite the, oh, my God, they're having to hang on for dear life and need a last-second field goal from Kyemi Fairbairn, because this time they proved that they did it against a good team. Where we talked about, is this just a team that just plays down to the level of the competition? And we realized, wait, they don't really play up to the level of competition, because the only game they've lost, they got smoked out of the building. So it was a good one as far as, you know, a measuring stick against a team that you think is pretty good.
Yeah, the second half is one where you get a little wobbly. You have a couple of turnovers, particularly the fumble. I don't really put a lot of the interception on CJ. I think it's a combination of things. Terrell Bernard made a great play.
Yeah.
He's got his back turned to CJ in zone and flips the hips and turns around and makes that play on the football. And maybe Diggs could have been in a different place, but whatever. The fumble, that one you can look at and go, okay. That's, you got to have better ball security. He had one hand on the football in the pocket as he was trying to get away from some pressure, and it led to a fumble. But as we said, the defense stepped up. But overall, since it's a game of two halves, that first half was the cleanest they've played, the best they've looked, and it reminded people that what they're capable of, even with some of the injuries. And, of course, Nico Collins, after scoring his long touchdown, goes out. And Stephon Diggs got the bulk of the targets after that. Tank Dell still not a big factor. But, you know, the 23 is something where I look at them and go, that's a team who can be a legit contender. If you can get that type of effort, if you can play as clean as football as you did in that first half, that's a team you look at and go, okay, that is what we expected. But, of course, I didn't expect the Bills to go away, and it got real tight real quick. The Bills changed the momentum of that game really quick, and then it was just holding on for dear life. I do appreciate Sean McDermott giving them one, because sometimes
I couldn't believe what they were doing.
Yeah, we got to get into that, because sometimes you think about quarterbacks. Oh, this quarterback's going to throw me one. At some point, he's going to throw me a pick.
Yeah,
no matter how well he's playing, he's going to make a mistake. Sean McDermott pulled that yesterday, where it's like, look, you've managed this game to a point where you're back in it. But you gave this game to the Texans, and he took full responsibility for what happened. But you think about the scenario. The Texans didn't really handle the situation well in the first place when they had the ball in scoring territory, considering what Kyemi Fairbairn is capable of. And instead of maybe running the ball, the Bills don't have any timeouts left. You take this intentional grounding penalty. You know what? Some of it, that call is kind of questionable. I know Dalton Schultz had cut inside, and then CJ throws that ball out of bounds. But we see plays like that all the time where they don't call anything, but they decide to call it. It's mostly they call it in high leverage situations, because if that happens, I think Warren Sharp or someone, maybe it's been one of the NFL people on Twitter pointed out that if that happens like in the second quarter, that particular play may not get called. In fact, Brock Purdy had a similar situation earlier, maybe this year, maybe even the same day, that nope, there's no pressure on him. It was like in the second quarter, and they didn't call it when he threw it out of bounds. It just happens sometimes. But the Texans probably should have ran the football force and kicked it. But instead, they make a mistake. And then the Bills are like, you know what? We appreciate your mistake, but we're going to give it right back to you. It's nuts. We talked about, it's Mike Collins and Samuels. These are not targets. Yeah. These are not people that he's comfortable with, he's going to know where this guy is. So we're just going to target these guys and not run the clock. The Texans sure have all their timeouts, and that was some of the consideration, but think about it. You run the ball three times, they use all their timeouts, and maybe when they get the ball back, how much time do they have left on the clock? At best.
They had like, was it like 20 seconds or 30 seconds?
When you punt the football, I think the Texans ran one play, and
there was
the one 7 seconds
to,
or so.
To RA in the middle of the field, and that's something that the Texans wouldn't be able to
do. They wouldn't have been. It would have been a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
It would have been a Hail Mary.
Oh, they got it back with 7 seconds.
Yeah, they got the ball back with 7 seconds. So maybe you're saying, well, he dropped back the pass. Some of the throws took longer. So there's time coming off the clock. But
they would have to, if they don't have any timeouts, the play would have to be to the sideline.
Yes.
Now
so
they have
easily
the Bills
defendable. Yeah.
Had to defend the whole field.
Yes, he had to defend the whole field. So it was malpractice. He took full responsibility. But sometimes you need it. Sometimes you need the coach or an opposing player to give you one, and that's what they did. And I asked this question somewhat jokingly about where Kyemi Fairbairn ranks on the Texans MVP rankings through 5 weeks. I don't know if there's anyone more influential besides C.J. Stroud. in
Collins.
The.
I think Collins.
Yeah, that's true.
Collins,
yeah.
Collins
it's top three. It's those two and then Kaimi. Yeah,
then, yeah,
that's
I
true.
Think it's Kaimi because there's no one on. There's no one like in the front because you look at just who you coming into the season. You think the best players on this team is, and you know another pretty quiet day for the front seven. As far as making those kind of big splashy plays, I think overall they played pretty well, but they didn't have, you know, there wasn't a Will Anderson sack or a Danielle Hunter sack. A
couple quarterback hits between them, but not the type of pressure that we expected from those bookends coming into the year. And I got another tweet about, are they both on IR? Did they play? I was like, yeah, they played. They just
they're
didn't impact the game, and they have not impacted games like we expected them to impact the games. You mentioned Nico Collins is obviously, if he's not one, then he's certainly two as far as the best Texan so far this year. He leaves the game with a hamstring injury after scoring his touchdown. And sometimes you got to hit the layups. And we've seen quarterbacks against the Texans not hit the layups. CJ hit his. And Josh Allen did not. Matt Collins, he is not a true number one. In fact, in most cases, he's a special teams wide receiver. But we know the departure of Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis left the Bills with a different wide receiver core. And without Shakir, there was not a guy that Josh Allen could depend on. And Shakir's not going to beat you down the field. He's going to be working in the middle in the slot. But Matt Collins is a guy who can run a little bit. And Josh Allen simply missed him. We're talking about CJ, wide open guy hits him. Josh Allen doesn't. Sometimes that could be the difference. CJ made a layup and Josh Allen missed it, and that begs the questions that we'll get to on the other side. Josh Allen took a hit that looked like he was concussed, and the Bills were like, "Here, you want some smelling salts? Cool. You want these? Get back out there." Now, I don't. We're not supposed to joke about concussions,
no.
But it looked like he was playing with one before he got hit. So we'll talk about. We'll talk about Josh Allen's play, and particularly because we had a segment about not being afraid of their weapons on Friday, and that seemed to ring true, but maybe the quarterback was a bigger problem than even the lack of skill talent on the outside. So we'll get to that when we come back. There's a lot to get to, a big college football weekend we can kind of get into as well, but certainly plenty of Texans questions to answer and talk about. We're just getting started here. We will be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club. Here's Del Olalea.
Sean Mapes is here with me as well for the fifth annual For the Fish Golf Tournament. Sean is dressed appropriately. He has a collared shirt.
Respecting the course.
I did not wear one because I...
No respect.
I'm like Malachi Moore. F this. I'm done here. we might get to Alabama.
Crash out of the year.
Yeah, wow. We might get to that at some point. Maybe we'll save it for tomorrow. But we're here. I don't think you can come out here and play. I mean, it is a tournament. But come out to Wildcat on a different day. You know, they have the highest elevations in the city. That's what I was told by John. So I'm going to believe.
That's why I'm out of breath.
I'm going to believe. Yeah, you had to walk. You had to climb the summit from your car to the clubhouse.
I hopped in one of the golf cart.
And you had a Sherpa in the golf cart too.
Yeah,
who made sure you got up here?
Yeah, I was hitting the oxygen mask.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and you brought a tent. Sean got here yesterday. He just finally made it up to the summit at Wildcat. But we're here. Wildcat's a nice place. I already tried their breakfast sandwich. It's good. Bacon, ham, or sausage, whatever you want. They got you squared away. So we'll be out here till noon. Okay. So after watching Josh Allen do what he did, the question obviously is going to be, how did the Bills handle a potential concussion? But you couldn't tell the difference between after that play and then before it. So are we giving this to the Texans? Because Josh Allen had one of the worst quarterback performances we've ever seen for a guy who's thrown that many passes. And the numbers tell you, historically, it tells you that as well. So other than the miss to Matt Collins early in the game, where that should have been a touchdown, I don't know if Matt Collins thought that ball was going to stay inside and it floated outside, or when they practice it, Josh Allen's always throwing it up the field, and Matt Collins didn't made the improper judgment, But watching him play, it was very, hey, remember that game I had here in the playoffs? I want to duplicate that. That's what it reminded me of.
It was a little bit. Now, it didn't have quite the just mind-numbing throws as that game, but this was a little bit of the sequel. This is like the big budget sequel.
Yeah, where it's like, not nearly as good.
First one was
It reminds you of what happened in the first one.
But some of the magic was gone. I mean, we did have, and again, this was even mostly Josh Allen's, but when he had the scramble on the sideline, he was out of bounds, and then he fumbled. And then the ref got on the mic and said he fumbled the basketball.
And then the announcer had to explain that this referee is a basketball coach. Now an AD somewhere.
This is some of the nonsense that I've come to expect when these two teams meet on this field. But yeah, I think in general, I mean, 9 for 30. Whew. It was a little bit of a throwback Josh Allen performance.
And it makes you even question more why Sean McDermott's like, you know what, he's 9 for 27. Let's get 3 more passes in to see what works out.
And no easy ones.
No.
All past the sticks.
These are all passes trying to gain chunk yards. So the thought of, they think the Texans are going to call 3 timeouts, so they want to throw the football. No, this was, and try to get a first down. This is trying to go down the field, grab a couple of chunk plays, and try to win this game with no timeouts left. And no real seconds to spare. We're gonna do the impossible because we have Josh Allen. A Josh Allen who had not looked like the guy we've seen for the last 3 or 4 years. We look like early Josh Allen or Wyoming Josh Allen. What are you doing? Sometimes you let the field tell you what's going on. You should feel fortunate that the Texans made a mistake with the intentional grounding and you go to overtime. But like I said, sometimes a guy will throw you one. In this case, Sean McDermott did it. But I think the Bills are going to have to answer the question about how he got back on that field. Yeah. It may be a quick answer. They may his head wasn't really hurt, but what we saw on video was the guy bounced the back of his head bounce off the turf or the side of his head, excuse me. Yeah. And then he looked he was motionless for maybe a second or two, and then he eventually started to move. Those are all the indicators that say, okay, this guy at least should probably be held out for more than like a play or two.
Yeah, his head bounced like a basketball on the field, and then he looked out, like he looked just like a boxer would, like just completely out. And I was surprised when I saw, when I saw Mitch Trubisky was the backup, I was like, oh, whoa, lost track of Mitch Trubisky. This is where he is.
I'm not as surprised by it because Mitch Trubisky, when he came out, was a guy who was athletic, was big enough. Let's get the Walmart value version of Josh Allen, and so we don't have to change much, and it won't be as good, but we kind of can do the same thing.
The failed model.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then when he had his one play, and they cut away, and it was Josh Allen running back, getting his on the sideline, getting his helmet, getting handed smelling salts, which I caught in real time. I was like, they're just handing him smelling salts and telling him to get back out there. Did we fall into a time loop and all of a sudden we're back in like the early 2000s as far as
Josh Allen was
protocol?
Smoking a cigarette in the blue tent. We reverted back to a time where concussions, he's dinged up. That's what he is.
Yeah, he got his bell rung.
His bell rung, and he's going to be fine.
Maybe that's what the Bills doctor was like. Yeah, he just got his bell rung. He should be good.
The Bills doctor, he's only going to get some grace because Josh Allen was worse. I mean, he was just as bad before, so you can't blame the performance after that on, he's probably woozy. We'll take it, though. He was bad. He was bad before. He was bad after. Yeah. And after that initial, the initial drive where James Cook was kind of eating them up a little bit, that led to a field goal, the Texans D, particularly in that first half, found a way to kind of stymie anything the Buffalo Bills did. So, 4-1. Easily leading the division. Where would you put them now? We saw what Baltimore did. Baltimore hung on and beat Cincinnati and Cincinnati. Cincinnati's now 1-4. And Joe Burrow was like, yeah, we're just not a championship-level football team. Oh, thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
I appreciate that that analysis of your 3 games under 500 football team as their punter/holder dropped the snap that led to McPherson missing his kick, and Baltimore took advantage thanks to Derrick Henry and they kicked a field goal to win. So, 4-1 would tell you that they're at least the second best team in football. But we have eyes. We don't have to just go by the record. Where do we put them? Do we put them squarely behind the Chiefs, or do we think the Chiefs shouldn't be even considered? If we talk about what the Chiefs are this year, not what we believe the Chiefs to be because of what they've done in the past, what have we seen from the Chiefs this year? Are the Chiefs still clearly the best team in football, or does that belong to Minnesota? And where do you think the Texans should be?
I mean, honestly, if we're just playing the game of how you look this year, it might be Minnesota. But I think as far as the Texans are concerned, like just looking at the AFC, I think you still have to give it to the Chiefs because despite how uninspired they look in all their wins, it's all wins so far for the Chiefs. Their point differential is plus 20. The Texans' point differential, minus 12.
Because of that blowout and their close wins, yeah.
They're still having to dig themselves out from under the Vikings game. So you can't even really go with the Chiefs haven't looked good in their wins because the Texans really haven't looked that good either. Yesterday was, I think, the best game that they played when you take into account their opponent. And even, like we mentioned, the first, you know, 2.5 quarters, they were awesome. And so I think those are probably the two teams. You probably need to look at the Ravens as well because after their 0-2 start, they've been one of the best teams in football. It's just we're still so early in the season that the 0-2 start is 40% of their schedule. So I think it's still the top four of Chiefs, Texans, Ravens, Bills, which is probably the top four we would have had coming into the season, maybe with the Bengals in there, and they're nowhere close to this conversation. So, yeah, I think we pretty clearly have a top four. It's just how they shake out. If you want to put the Ravens ahead of the Texans, I think that's fine. I think if you want to put you really can't put the Bills ahead of any of them because they have head-to-head losses with all the teams we're talking about except for the Chiefs. So, yeah, I think that's pretty – they're squarely at the top in that top tier. If you want to put the Chiefs in their own tier, giving them back-to-back champs a little bit of extra credit from years past, you can do that. But I think it's those four.
Yeah, I don't think there is that much of a debate. The Texans obviously played the early game. Then just watching the rest of the league, whether it be through red zone or just the other games going on, I don't think there's a lot of difference between these teams. You can look to Baltimore and go, okay, nice win. Gave up a lot of points to the Bengals.
Shootout.
Yeah. Should that have happened? Yeah. Well, the Bengals have weapons. They have, and Joe Burrow is playing better. So, okay, we'll push that aside. And, of course, the Chiefs will play tonight. And we'll watch Minnesota in the morning, and it's like, they get out to a good lead, and then Sam Darnold doesn't play well, and that seems like the equalizer. You have Brian Flores in that defense, but then if Sam Darnold's going to play that way, that brings them back to the pack.
Yeah.
You could tell me that
even like the Commanders 4-1.
Yeah, but we didn't even mention them in the discussion. Yeah. But the Commanders at 4-1, a lot of that is we. Not sure we should believe in you because of what you have been, and you got this rookie quarterback, and if we go man for man, we don't think you're that talented of a team, and you go through some of the teams they've beat, particularly yesterday. It's the Browns. It's like, oh, okay, the Browns. Yeah. Now the Giants aren't great, but the Giants going to Seattle win a game, so it's a bundle of teams in the middle. We're just not sure where these teams stand right now.
Lions probably – I mean, they definitely deserve a mention.
Yeah.
If you want to say the Lions are the best team of the NFC, I would not argue that.
Yeah. There's
especially with, like you said, how Sam Darnold looked.
Yeah, and you think about San Francisco, who they lost the game to Arizona. They're now 2-3. They had a bad loss. They blew a lead to the Rams as well. So
best 2-3 team in the league. I'll say it.
I'm glad you're out on that limb. Look at you. Very, very, very.
Actually, the Cardinals, because they have the head-to-head.
Yeah. See, there it is. The Cardinals are like, excuse me. Look at us. We just went into San Francisco and I think it's just a bunch of teams jumbled up. And if you told me you don't believe there's an elite team and contenders just by default right now, I would agree. There's a lot of them who maybe 4 weeks from now are in a very different place.
I think the AFC top four, I feel pretty good about.
So you would have
Chiefs, Texans,
and Bills,
Ravens,
Bills. Okay, that makes sense. The four division winners, clearly the best teams in their division. and well, Pittsburgh is up. Pittsburgh found a way to drop a game.
The other 3-2 teams of the AFC are the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Denver Broncos. I don't buy them.
I don't believe in either one.
Definitely not. I feel good about saying it's a top four, not a top five.
Yeah, yeah, definitely not a top six. The Broncos won after they were down, and if Gardner Minshew doesn't throw a pick six, they could have been down 17-3, but they come back from that point and just blow the Raiders away. So
the Steelers are more real than the Broncos.
I would say that, but everything's kind of fragile when you get beyond like the top four, and a lot of that has to do with who the quarterbacks are on those teams, and the Texans benefit from one of the good ones. Now, there's been some criticism of his OC, partly because of their lack of pop offensively. I think a lot of people had higher expectations for what this offense would be. Bobby Sloak's catching it. So when we come back, we'll talk about should the Texans be better on offense when we start to take in some factors, including injuries and maybe lack of offensive line talent. We'll get to that when we come back. But first, I need to talk about my bookie. And need is not the correct term. What I want to say is you should be going to MyBookie, and I want to talk about it. Just go to MyBookie.ag. That is the website. We got a Monday night game tonight. You can bet for or against those Chiefs. See if they can get to 5-0, or will the Saints kind of bounce back from their two-game losing streak. If you have a feel on that game, go to MyBookie.ag and put some money down. Whether it be the NFL, we got preseason NBA going on, you can put money down on that. I like to mention all of these options because MyBookie tells you you can bet on anything, anywhere, anytime. Just go to the website and check them out. They have a 100% match up to $1,000 when you make a deposit. Bet975 is that promo code. You sign up, you check them out. You can pick and choose what you want from the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the playoffs are going on, NBA, NHL, all there for you, whether it be the live betting from their sports book or you want to take a look at their live casino. You like cards? You want to play cards online? MyBookie has that for you. Just go to mybookie.ag, bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
The Del Ulalea Show is broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club. Now back to Del Ulalea.
Welcome back to the show. I forgot that Austin was a Cleveland Browns fan, so we're talking about how much the Browns fans are still behind Deshaun Watson, backing their guy. Austin disagrees if Brown Twitter is any indication, but we know Twitter's not a real place. Yeah. I'm sure all the real Browns fans are still well behind their dude as I'm watching him on the highlight package continue to miss guys against the Commanders. It just so happens that he came up and ESPN's talking about
him. Bottom line is, what should they do with Deshaun Watson?
It's not a great question considering all they gave up and how much they're paying him. Not a great question to ask, but we don't have that problem here, obviously, with C.J. Stroud. And the expectations for this offense were ones that kind of led people to believe that this was going to be an offense that might actually have a name, like an offense so good we have to give it a nickname. I know a lot of people are leaning into 713 because of the numbers of some of the players. Now, I don't know how 12 fits into that because he's the best receiver, but a lot of people like the 713 stuff. This offense hasn't played well enough to get a name so far, and who is that? Whose fault is that? Some people like to put it on Bobby Sloak. Some of it has to do with the fact that C.J. Stroud has the most third and six-plus dropbacks in all the NFL. That means you're putting your quarterback in tough situations. It just so happens he's good enough to, for the most part, make it not a problem. I think something we did not point to a lot, at least a lot of people didn't, was the questions about that offensive line. I know we talked about, before the season began, the interior and how good that would be. It turns out the tackles haven't been great. Now we have another injury. Titus Howard's out. We saw Blake Fisher. He was okay in some instances, and he got beat a couple times. That's what you expect from a rookie. Laremy Tunsil, now that he's not committing false start penalties, he's not protecting that edge as well as he could, because sometimes when you don't cheat, I mean cheat the snap, sometimes you're going to get beat. And he had a couple times where he had to say look out if he was yelling at CJ. So, but overall, the offensive line, particularly the tackles, were okay. on in the game yesterday, but we could point to them and go, why isn't this offense where we want it to be? They're not paving the way for the running game as well as maybe some people thought, particularly after week one, and also the penalties. It wasn't a problem in the first half when we saw them score 17 points, and they scored on their first drive coming out of the half to make it 20-3. And then it wasn't necessarily the offensive line, but the penalties started to pick up a little bit overall, and we saw some stalling on the offense, and the Bills get back in the game. But I don't look at Sloak and go, okay, he's a problem. Because if you could run the football like you did in week one, then we're not talking about him running the football too much. The offensive line isn't what you want it to be. And until that gets fixed, and if it doesn't get fixed, I think these discussions and questions about why they're not running on all cylinders is going to be a thing all year.
Yeah, I would put it mostly on the offensive line not producing not really the way we thought they would, because other than all the penalties by Tunsil, which kind of expected some of them, but not the absolute, like, they're just getting massacred with penalties against the Vikings and the Bears to that level. But I think it's mostly the offensive line, and it now that's where it goes hand in hand, because if you don't trust your offensive line, now the plays you're calling are going to be different, and so I can see why you want to pin it on Bobby Slowick, and I don't think he's maximizing this offense. I don't think by any means he's doing a fantastic job. I think he's doing satisfactory work, and it is it's just the players that are kind of not letting him down, but are letting really the whole team down. That's where this offense is not firing on all cylinders the way we thought it would.
Yeah. Maybe he's not a problem per se, but is he an additive right now?
No.
Is he overcoming things and getting the best out of what they have right now without their top two backs, at least according to their depth chart? You can take or leave. However you think of Dameon Pierce, maybe you think Cam Akers is better, but how they treated them on the depth chart.
Yeah.
Dameon Pierce was their second back. He's not playing. We know Joe Mixon hasn't played since week two, but I would agree that there are some things that he has not gotten to that you would think that would help this offense. And we know none of us are experts, at least most of us aren't experts. So if you ask me directly, oh, what's he doing? I can only look at the results.
Yeah.
I can only look at
some BS. Yeah. That's what he's doing.
Bobby Slowick on his BS right now. You can only look at the results. And the results are this team that's kind of scuffled. He didn't have any answers for Minnesota, but that could be just, hey, no one has answers for Minnesota right now. But even against the Bears, where the Bears defense is okay, you could not get anything going to the point where, at least to the point where we thought this offense would be. So 5 weeks in, I would say, I'm not even putting it on Sloak, I would just say their offensive line and the offense as a whole has not lived up to what we expected. And I don't think anyone would disagree. That's just what we've seen through 5 weeks.
I think if you want to put it on Slowick, the case you would make is the second half offense from this team.
That's true, yeah.
Really, since week two, right? I'm a little fuzzy on the offense in week one, especially in the second half. But, yeah, they're mostly fine. But the fact in all these games, in the Bears game, in the Jags game, yesterday, really the third quarters and the start of the fourth quarters, it is punt fest. It is, I mean, the fumble on Stroud, I don't think that was necessarily like anything wrong. It's just you got to put two hands on the ball there by CJ. But I think that if you want to say that there's something wrong with how Sloak is either game planning or designing this offense or calling plays, you're looking at the fact that in the Jags game, in the second half, it was all punts until the last drive. And in the Bills game, they scored on the opening drive, and then it was turnovers and punts until the last drive, where in even the last drive, it was 5 yards and a field goal. You know, the same thing in the Bears game. The Bears game was just unwatchable in the second half because those two teams punting back and forth.
To your point,
I think that is where you have the Bobby Slowick isn't doing something that he should be. But even then, I don't think that's like a disaster that it is all on him, because I think some of that goes back to the offensive line issues. This is a team that can't run the ball.
Yeah, they scored 17 points in the first half in the second half against the Colts. They have not scored more than 7 in any game since. It was 6 yesterday, and now the final 3 was enough to win the game. But yeah, they have not found a way coming out of half since that week 1 win to put points on the board. And it's brought teams back in games that they had thoroughly outplayed in the first half, Minnesota excluding, because they didn't score at all in the first half. They scored that one touchdown to make it a two-touchdown game, and then Minnesota obviously ran away with it. So second-half offense has been a problem.
Yeah.
And how do you fix that? Well, the first thing, at least this week, was the penalties got reduced by the offensive side of the ball. And can you find a way, when teams take away whatever you're doing, to exploit them in the first half? Simple thing to do would be able to run the football a little bit more. And until that changes, I think we're going to be in a situation where teams will adjust, and then that first plan is off the board. And how do you adjust to their adjustments? And right now, turnovers have played a part in that. Well, at least yesterday they did this to slow down a drive, and then obviously put you in a bad spot with the fumble. It's just second half wise, there's not a lot of rhythm, and until that gets fixed, I think we're going to be in these games. I don't think it'll happen next week. I hope not the Patriots.
No, next week. I mean, this is where we're going to be grading on a curve of
How do they look against maybe the worst team in football? Name the Panthers, maybe.
Yeah, those are probably the worst teams. I was gonna say the Dolphins, but
yeah, you got to win.
5 points separate them,
but
so I can't say they're
well,
bad.
Only because you
hit Jacksonville's also.
Yeah,
Jacksonville and Tennessee are also one win teams.
That's true. It wasn't great football. If you tuned into any of that Patriots Dolphins game, you had two kickers missing chip shot field goals in the first half. You had a snapper roll the ball back on a field goal attempt. Those two teams played like their record indicated they should play, and obviously it came down to Jalen. Well, maybe not obviously, because who was watching that game besides a select few?
Obviously,
but Polk, the rookie wide receiver, did the whole thing where he had his back to the inline, and his toe came down, but his heel came down out of bounds on the white paint, and the Patriots missed a chance to win that game. And I saw someone go, "That's the worst rule in football." Okay. Let's wait until the next time someone fumbles the ball out of the end zone when they're going in, and it turns into a touchback, and then that'll be the worst rule in football.
There's a lot of worst rules
in
football.
Yeah,
targeting to some is the worst rule in football.
Yes, if you like college football on a late Saturday night, then yes. We don't know what targeting is. That became a conversation once again.
If this isn't targeting,
I don't know what it is. Okay, sure.
That's right. You don't know what targeting is,
including you, Brock Osweiler, who's on the call. That's how I had to spend my Saturday night, listening to Brock Osweiler campaign for Cal to win that football game.
Pac-12 fried.
Yeah, well, sorry, Brock. No longer. You're a Big 12 member. They're an ACC member. It's over for you guys. He went to Arizona State. And Reese Davis, a full day out in Berkeley. The voice was rough, but he found a way to make it through. The initial guy on the call was like Dave Fleming. And they go, "Dave's going through some family stuff," and I was like, "Huh, what does that mean?" But Dave Fleming wasn't on the call. Reese Davis was, so that had to pop up the day of.
Yeah,
did Dave Fleming have to leave Berkeley and then go wherever he had to go?
Probably, right?
Probably. He probably was in the city, and it turns out something popped up. So, whatever's happening with Dave Fleming, hopefully it works out. But
Davis, warrior.
Yeah, everyone's like, Reese Davis was broadcasting all day long. Well, he did the morning. How much talking was he doing between now? How much work was he doing between?
I think I saw it was awful announcing, call it a 22-hour shift.
Yeah,
because,
what?
Because he started, you know.
Yeah, I know the time
whatever
frame.
Time he shows up for game day.
What did he do? I guess at some point he realized he had to do it.
The 10 hours in the middle.
So he had to start studying on the game, I guess. But it's not like he was talking.
He could still take like a 5-hour
nap. Yeah, what are we talking about?
And then study for 5 more hours.
Like, I appreciate that. The voice was gone because he does game day. He probably goes on voice rest because he has to talk for that long. Reese Davis, we do that every day. What are you talking about, Reese Davis?
Voice rest.
Yeah, you got commercials. You got Pat McAfee yelling. You don't talk as much as I do. What are you talking about? Now, I didn't have to call a game, but still. 22 hours. Relax, awful announcing. That man took a long-ass nap at some point during the day. Got some studying in.
I don't know. Checkout was at 11. I don't know how he did it.
The game didn't start till what, 7:30 local time, and he was done with game day by, what, 9, what, 10 maybe? 10 local time.
9 local time is when it would end.
The game start here at 11.
Yeah, so it's 2 hours.
Yeah, 9. 9 local time, yeah. He didn't have that tough of a day. Reese thought he was going to party all day, and that's why that voice. That's why he lost his voice. He got that call 3 hours before the game.
It was the post-game gay cigars.
He got that notification that he was going to have to call that game 3 hours before, and he was done for. He's like, oh, crap. Let me figure it out a way. So that happened. Late night college football, Pac-12, and now ACC after dark, but in a former Pac-12 location. We are way behind. So we'll get out of here right now. And where we are is at Wildcat Golf Club for the 5th annual For the Fish Golf Tournament. It's helping out the CCA Texas. It's helping them out. They funded $10.7 million in marine habitat projects on the Texas coast. So if you take advantage of the great fishing in the state of Texas, go to ccatexas.org/golf. Or at least that was a register. But if you want to just help out, ccatexas.org is the website to go to. They'll take your donations. It's for a great cause. If you can hear the background noise, some of the golfers are in the club right now getting ready as the tournament starts at noon. Okay, we'll get out of here now. We'll get into what happened around the NFL. Some funny things happened. We mentioned Deshaun Watson, at least in reference to Austin being a fan of the Browns. The Commanders, how good are they? Should they be a team we actually take seriously? Certainly, at least with their quarterback, their offense should be. We'll get into that and the rest of the NFL when we come back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club. Here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. We are out at Wildcat Golf Club celebrating CCA Texas. And Sean informed us that he went to go see Joker of Folie à Deux. And Sean is a lover of bad movies, so he has a more positive review than some. And it's not positive. It's just that he did it all with a smile on his face, which means...
True to the Joker.
Yeah, he enjoyed some of the chaos that went on. We're not going to give anything away. Just know that we'll save it for Friday. But I already know what happened because I listened to a podcast that had all the spoilers. And the fact that I made the decision not to go, at least for me... was a good one because it's not being well reviewed, and it did have enough music in it that would have driven me crazy.
It has enough music to drive any reasonable person crazy.
I'm not looking for especially, what they're offering.
Especially because the two people that do all of the singing in the movie, one of them is a singer who is acting, and that's good.
Always.
One person is an actor who is singing, which you really come to feel when they are singing together.
And I believe that one person who's an actor who is singing did put out an album at some point. Didn't Joaquin Phoenix
try to start the line?
I think he was in a band, at some point. And maybe still is. But that is your offhanded review of Joker 2. It is not good.
Not good, but not as bad as they say. It's... just the,
if you are Sean Mapes,
the non-musical parts aren't as bad as you think. I mean, it's still not good, but it's not as bad.
Which is a stirring review and a recommendation for the movie.
I feel like when I say it's not bad, it's not that bad, I have to say it's still not good. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's below average, but not... you're wasting your time if you enjoy things of that nature. So go see it or not. We'll probably talk about it more on Friday. Okay, we mentioned it earlier with Sam Darnold. I thought at one point Aaron Rodgers was going to need a life alert.
He was
crawling on the ground away from whatever he suffered. He was crawling away from the epicenter of what he suffered from that injury. He just I thought, okay, the old man is done.
It's like when you get hurt in like a shooting video game and you can still get revived.
Yeah.
You're just crawling around.
Respawn. He was crawling around waiting to get respawned. It was nuts. It did look like something right out of Call of Duty. He was able to come back. He was not good. But yet the Jets are still in it because of some of the issues Sam Darnold had completing the footballs. He threw a bad pick, too. He overthrew a guy. Sam Darnold did. But Aaron Rodgers threw an even worse pick to close the game out. And, of course, he's looking at referees going, bro, you do that low and inside to Mike Williams, who the whole point of having him, if you're going to throw the back shoulder or outside stuff, fades to get it up high and away from the defender. He threw it low and inside, and Stephon Gilmore picked it off. It's a bad throw. He complained. Didn't matter. The Jets are now 2-3. He's not good. I don't know if I want to go to Washed. Wash Rogers. Capital W Washed. But
he's on Washed Watch.
He is on Washed Watch. That's a team who's not dynamic. Alan Lazard kept dropping passes for even the ones that Aaron Rodgers put on target. Garrett Wilson should have taken that slander from Justin Jefferson when he was like, yeah, with all due respect, I'm not Garrett Wilson. And even though Justin Jefferson struggled because of Sam Darnold in that second half, you can see the clear difference between those two wide receivers. And hell, even Justin Jefferson had a drop on that final drive that could have would have gotten them a first down, maybe eventually led to a touchdown to put the game away. The Jets did have a chance to come back and win, but they did not. So they lose in the London game, and the Vikings are now 5-0. I'm trying to think of other things that stood out yesterday around the league. That was actually good football. I mentioned before we went to break that Jaden Daniels and that Commanders offense took care of the Browns. The combination of Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury, considering some of the complaints or concerns people had about Daniels coming into the year, the fact that Cliff Kingsbury is the one who unlocked it, the things that happened in Arizona, not a lot of people had high hopes for that hire. And Dan Quinn, at least through five games, has hit on it. Yeah. I think they're the surprise of the league, at least on the positive side.
Yeah, I think they're definitely the surprise of the league. I mean, they're 4-1, and they're a team that I don't think anyone really expected to be a factor in that division, and now they're leading it, and you have to feel pretty good about it because you'd think that they get better. Now, maybe what happened with Cliff Kingsbury teams in Arizona is that they would get off to hot starts and then they would kind of come back to the pack and tail off as the season goes on. But maybe it's different with him as an offense coordinator as opposed to a head coach. But I think in general, I mean, there's really nothing bad you can say about the way that Daniels is playing right now that isn't something that you think, well, it's because he's a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I watched him in the regular season. I thought he would have the most success early of all the rookies because he played from the pocket. He was very comfortable in the pocket throwing from there. I mean, obviously, he has the ability to run the football. Had 82 yards yesterday. Didn't have a big-time day throwing the football, but at this point, maybe we just recalibrate what we think a big-time day for offenses is right now. 14-25, did throw an interception. I think in the red zone maybe. It wasn't a great decision, but did have a touchdown, and then obviously I mentioned 82 yards on the ground. So the Commanders dominate the Browns, 34-13. They're 4-1, and obviously the stories on ESPN are about Deshaun Watson. I don't think it's that much of a story other than are they ever going to bench him because have we come to the realization at least that we believe he's no longer good. He's never going to be good again. Are we at that point? Do we think there's a turnaround? I think at this point we're just waiting for the Browns to understand that this isn't flipping back to 2019.
Yeah, it's tough because he basically has to be on the roster next season with the way it's structured. So I think it's a little bit of they're just kind of putting off the we have to bench him and pay our backup quarterback this much money situation. But, yeah, I don't know how you can have hope that it's going to get good. Maybe there's still some people out there that think it can get better than this, better than arguably worst quarterback in the league range, but I don't know how it's going to become a situation where you think it's good, or it's a situation where they can make the playoffs with him as their quarterback.
Like, they made the playoffs last year, we know, with all those quarterbacks, and Joe Flacco was the best of them. Could they get the average? Now, their defense isn't as good as it was last year.
That's a problem.
So they, but, you know, they can't even lean on that. So they actually might need good quarterback play, and now they're 1-4, so it's not going
to
happen.
They're able to have these great defenses when they're paying Deshaun Watson $1 million against the cap the first 2 years of his contract. Now they're getting the full force of that cap hit in their salary cap number, and so the rest of the team can't be as talented as it was back then, and so you need your quarterback to be good, and he isn't.
Yeah, the point of him now, or at least they suspect it was, he was going to be a guy that raised the level all around him, and at this point you could probably say he's sinking the ship more than anything else. We need to get the break here. We're 1 hour in. We're at Wildcat Golf Club. We're in the clubhouse. As I said before, you may be able to hear the golfers as they're getting ready for the fifth annual For the Fish Golf Tournament, and it's benefiting the CCA Texas. You can go to ccatexas.org to donate to a very worthy cause. We are 1 hour in. We got 1 hour to go here. We'll get into some college football stuff. We'll continue to talk some NFL and Texans as well. There's some injury concerns regarding the Texans. We'll get to that in hour two. We'll be back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.